俺那个，俺老乡自己没过，给人家过住些，还上班的这些，啥些的，那个就该，那多少天那个就你们接的，开始那，那个就上班大爷，当不上班大爷的，牛毛包些的，对小孔中那些牛毛包些的，咱说说嚷嚷，刚刚这些咱下来，刚刚这些的，其实牛毛不用给全部都，其实咱这边都靠我了，怕我就刚刚这些啥的把的。 牛毛包的，他扎多，提的些，但你没把水过多，什么接着话的？就像，今天个牛毛包的把没把水过多，就像他牛毛包往个让几斤几斤，让几斤咸了呀，也话多啊，什么理过了？到底你这个没多，就像今天咱的咸了，咸些的白嘛是炸全部修，咸了点的，说说水果供应了，然后咸了点的，说说肉酱来接，然后。 现在的人，俺江巴镇在我公园的话，其实现在在我这边呢，江巴镇在我公园已经在我那，但第一点呢，俺那说说给，你解决了，第三把子上了上了亲戚，俺第二点呢，第几点，俺第三点呢，第几，俺七七买呢，第几，俺三月过完头呀的，就是第现在江巴镇在我说吧，第一个面的，第一元旦第二点的用过多少么子，第江巴镇在我，但俺那水果公园的嘞，元旦什么大。 牛毛包的嘞，卷什么的，第二个是，那个就给的那个就，那学费的怕几几的，那给的那个，现在那边加瓦的，现在那边加瓦是，加瓦的几个没什么什么其他，现在偏巴的，那个刚刚偷偷几个银子的，像加瓦的，你就光买的，那水果光买，第二个刚偷偷几个银子，第二个就学费的偏巴的，第二个偏巴的，那给的那。 那现在什么叫通用的呢？凝结三八的，弄个的，那这个的凝结三八的，先给六百几个的说出去，最后怎么样的？俺都是那个的，伢们接些，俺那给的呢，什么都讲出来些。其实俺的那接话的伢呢，没什么叫他们这个都是上有个往头发去的，一些头发几个人什么些，俺都是那个的，讲究什么些，俺那伢们接话的，那可是多少天呢？那个就，罗圈自己没给。
Good morning. So yesterday afternoon we looked at the seventh verse, and this presented a summary of the key practices that we've covered thus far in the text. So in brief, when we summarized, we saw that the first thing that we should meditate on every day is the faults that come with the afflictive minds, or the faults that follow from allowing the afflictive minds to arise and to be acted upon. And we spoke about these afflictions, minds such as attachment and anger and jealousy and pride, all this these vast arrays of destructive emotions. They cause harm to oneself in that moment as well as through the accumulation of negative karma, they lead to suffering for ourselves in future lives. And furthermore, due to acting under the influence of these afflictions, we also harm all those others around us. So therefore, the afflictions cause only harm and destruction to ourselves and to others, both in the short term as well as in the long term. And the suffering experience that we call samsara, this is all due to the afflicted minds. It's these afflicted minds that cause us all our harm and suffering and pain that we experience. So we need to think about this every morning and see clearly that the afflictions only cause fault, and therefore they need to be abandoned. And then secondly, we need to think about the faults of the self-cherishing mind, the selfish attitude that places us first and foremost. And think about the kind of person, so when meditating on this, look at it in the perspective of the kind of person we want to become. So we have the aspiration to attain the mind of bodhicitta, to attain the various bodhisattva paths and be of greatest benefit to others, and to have only a beneficial impact in the world. So if we have, or having such an aspiration ourselves, then the self-cherishing attitude that places us at the center of all our activities, this is completely inappropriate and contrary. So therefore, in order to achieve this goal of giving rise to this mind of bodhicitta, we need to place the needs of others first and foremost. And this we need to meditate on in some detail. And meditating on this in some detail, we'll come to see the preciousness of others, we'll come to see how others only have the wish to experience happiness, and everything they do is motivated to achieve this. Yet they are unskilled in that they don't know what the causes are for actual happiness and what needs to be abandoned so as to avoid suffering. And thinking like this and seeing how all sentient beings, despite wanting happiness, keep accumulating causes for further suffering, then minds such as compassion and love will naturally arise within us. So this then is the second part of our meditation. The first was seeing the faults of the afflictions, and the second is to seeing the faults of the self-cherishing mind, and thereby give rise to the other cherishing mind through meditating on love and compassion. And as we've heard previously, and we heard again yesterday, that to actually give rise to love and compassion, it's imperative that one engages in the practice of patience. So here we then can group these three minds together in the second part of the practice: love, compassion, and patience, and meditate on patience as we've heard. And remembering that the meaning of patience is not just physically not responding or verbally not responding in difficult situations, but it's mentally keeping the mind open and gentle and loving. And thereby the mind is not coming under the influence of anger or annoyance or frustration. That is the practice of patience. As if the mind is open, one can respond skillfully if appropriate. But if the mind is dominated by the afflictions, that is very difficult to do. So this then is what we should look at, what we should include in our daily meditation. And so each morning we'd start out by generating the wish to not harm others at all, and to be of benefit to others. And this mind of wanting to be of benefit to others and not harm them, this naturally follows on from first thinking about the afflictions, the causes of our suffering, the causes of all the problems and difficulties that others are experiencing too, and then thinking about how others want to experience only happiness, and that myself as an aspirant bodhicitta needs to bring this about, and therefore place them at the forefront of my activities, and thereby give rise to the minds of love and compassion and patience. Then, having done this meditation, making the clear commitment that today everything I say, everything I do, and even the minds that I generate, they will be non-harmful towards others. And furthermore, whenever I have the opportunity to be of benefit to others, I will skillfully engage in beneficial activities to others. So this is the sequence of meditation. And if we engage in this on a daily basis over a sustained period of time, then these minds will become more familiar to us. Our habits with these minds, or our habituation to these minds, will become stronger and stronger and stronger. And contrary, the minds that are contrary to them, they will weaken. And then especially if we add to this brief reminders during the day of our meditation, just when you have a few free minutes here and there, a few free minutes when we're doing something that doesn't take much concentration, recall our object of meditation. And then when we encounter difficult situations, we will respond more skillfully. And we'll see over a period of time how mentally we are developing. And this experience of mental progression, this means we are spiritually progressing. This means our attainment of our Dharma goals, these are all nearing. So goals such as Buddhahood, such as liberation from suffering, such as minds, such as wisdom realizing emptiness and bodhicitta, and minds such as calm abiding. All the attainments of all of these are nearing, and we know that through seeing the development in our way of thinking and our way of relating to others. Now we come then to the final verse. The final verse has two key parts. So the first is, when we engage in our practice, we should guard ourselves against the eight worldly concerns, the eight worldly dharmas. And then secondly, having come to the understanding, as we mentioned yesterday, that meditation on minds such as love and compassion and patience, whilst extremely beneficial, they cannot serve to eliminate from the very root the afflictive minds. So therefore, we also need to engage in the meditation on emptiness, because it's only the wisdom directly realizing emptiness that can cut at the very root cause from which all the afflictive minds arise.
That's
the eighth verse. Also, having not defiled all these by the stain of preconceptions of the eight worldly dharmas, and by perceiving all phenomena as illusory, free from attachment, I shall be released from bondage. So let's look very briefly then at the eight worldly dhammas. So the eight worldly dhammas, so these are divided into four groups of two. So the first would be gain and loss. So this would refer to when you get something, you become joyful. When you don't get something that you want, then you become dispirited, upset that you didn't get something that you had wanted. So that's the first pair, gain and loss. Then the second pair is praise and blame. So this is quite clear. We become joyful when someone praises us, and we become dispirited when someone insults us or belittles us, and certainly blames us for something, whether we did it or didn't do it, whether we did or didn't do it. So that's the second pair, praise and blame. Then the third is maybe reputation and ill repute or disgrace. So this then is, again, we become joyful when we are praised, when we have a good reputation, when we hear people talking about us in a complimentary way. And then we become dispirited when we don't receive the recognition that we feel that we should, or when people talk about us in a very negative way. So that's the third pair. So the first was gain and loss, the second praise and blame, and the third reputation and disgrace or ill repute. And then the fourth and final pair is pleasure and sorrow. So here we become happy when we experience success, and we become depressed when we experience failure. So this is then the fourth pair, pleasure and sorrow. So these eight worldly concerns are things that we don't generally think about very much, but they actually govern a lot of what we intentionally do and intentionally do not do. And this is because so much of what we do is under the influence or the control of the afflicted mind of attachment. And attachment and these eight worldly concerns are very closely linked. So we see this impact is if, for example, there's someone who generally is very complimentary about us or praises us, talks well to us or about us, we like that person. And that the mind of liking that person is due to our attachment. And so such a person, we'll be happy to meet them, we'll be happy to help them, and in fact we'll probably go out of our way to help such a person. Then the opposite situation, so someone who we know that whenever we meet them, they are less likely to be complimentary to us, because that's their personality, or they dislike us, and they're likely to talk to us in a way we don't like to hear. So here then this is the mind of dislike, and this mind of dislike comes again from the mind of attachment. So then this starts to govern these eight worldly concerns in these ways, govern who and what we engage with and don't engage with, due to being under the influence of attachment. Now this is clearly completely unrelated to this other cherishing mind, this mind that we want to develop, this mind that puts the needs and the welfare of others first and foremost in our motivation. So therefore, guarding ourselves against coming under the influence of these eight mundane concerns means, or the way to do this is to intentionally generate this other cherishing mind, intentionally generate thinking about the impact of our activities on others. So therefore, if we engage in something, if we're doing so under the influence of the other cherishing mind, we wouldn't be concerned about anything that we gain through this interaction, or our reputation being enhanced, or others praising us. We would solely be concerned about the benefit that would come to others. So this is the importance of the eight worldly concerns, and why we need to guard ourselves against them, because they are an expression of attachment, and they prevent us from the cultivation of the other cherishing mind.
Then you more,
And the second key point in this verse is talking is about how to completely eliminate or eradicate the afflicted minds. So all our afflicted minds arise from the mind of true grasping. So this true grasping is the root cause of all the afflictions. So if we are able to eliminate the root cause, of course, everything else that comes from it will no longer arise. And to eliminate, completely eliminate this mind of true grasping, one needs to come to understand emptiness, come to meditate on emptiness, and come to realize emptiness. And this is the direct antidote. The wisdom, realizing emptiness, is the direct antidote to the afflicted mind of true grasping. The mind of true grasping, as we've heard, is the root of all the afflicted minds. So what is the mind of true grasping? So in brief, it is the mind that grasps at the appearance of true existence. So you have a mind, and first of all you have the object of true existence, and then a mind that grasps at it. So this mind is the mind of true grasping. It grasps at the appearance of truly existence. It grasps at the appearance of true existence. So this is the root cause of all the afflictions. So this, first of all, this appearance of true existence, this doesn't exist. The appearance of true existence doesn't exist. So that shows the mistake of this mind that grasps at it, at this appearance as existing truly.
Yo mare sta dimba du yo na kanis yo gure lamna ta ju da jin gang lai ma jue ba jie kuro ngwen ni zhu di ba xi yo gure se ju da ju lai me de jin ya me de gang ji le gang ga ma ti ge kuro ngwen ni zhu rang ngwen ni zhu di ba xi yo gure se de ni ji yo na de ni ji le dimba du ba la gure xi de.
So if something were truly existent, then it would not exist in dependence on anything else. It wouldn't exist in dependence on causes, for example. Rather, it would exist from its own side. So that is the meaning of true existence. Something that exists from its own side. Something that is not dependent on anything such as causes, but exists from its own side. So if something were truly existent, how would it exist? From its own side, not dependent on anything. Every single object that appears to the mind appears to us as if it were truly existent. So in other words, every single object that appears to our mind appears as if it exists from its own side, as if it exists free of causes and conditions, etc., but rather exists independently. So every single object that appears to us appears to be truly existent, although true existence doesn't exist. Then, so we have this appearance, then we have a mind that then grasps at this appearance of true existence as if it's believing it exists in this way. So this is the mind of true grasping. So every object appears with this appearance of true existence, and then there's a mind that grasps at this appearance of true existence as if it exists in the way that it appears, and this is the mind of true grasping. So here what we have is a mind, this mind of true grasping, that is grasping at the object of true existence which doesn't exist. So if we, as we've now just heard, all objects that appear to our mind appear as truly existent. So amongst all objects we have the self, or the I. So the I is an object, it appears to the mind, and when it appears to the mind, like all objects, it appears as being as if it were truly existent. So therefore it appears as if it's causeless, it appears as if it's independent, not dependent on anything else at all. And then we have a mind of the true grasping that grasps at this truly existence, at the true existence of this I, as if it exists in this way. And this particular mind of true grasping is called the self-grasping mind. So that's why we've heard a few things. So we've heard that every object that appears to the mind, it appears as if it is truly existent, and then the mind, then a mind that grasps at this appearance as being truly existent is the mind of true grasping. And but this true existence, if it is a non-existent, But if there was such a thing as true existence, what would it be? It would be something that is independent, something that is not dependent on anything else, but is existent from its own side. So let's now, so that's what we've heard. So let's take an illustration to show that although something appears as being truly existent, it cannot exist in this way. So we take a car. So a car, like all objects, has this appearance of true existence. It appears as if it is independent. It appears as if it is existent from its own side. So to find out if it is truly existent, one needs to investigate, because if it exists truly independently from its own side, then we should find something that is the car. So to explain this then in brief, we have a car, and now we're looking for this truly existent car within it. So where is this? We separate the car, we say, okay, here are the four wheels. And is the car to be found in the four wheels? Well, of course not, they're wheels, they're not car. Or we put the steering wheel and the seats over there, and we say, is the car to be found in these? No, the car can't be found in the steering wheel, because it's a steering wheel. It's not in the engine, because that's the engine, it's not the car. So doing that, it's very easy to understand that actually the car is not only can we find a truly existent or an independent car anywhere within it, but actually, what is car then? Because we can't say car doesn't exist. So what is car then? It is this collection of parts. So now all these parts we've mentally spread out, we pull them back together, and we've now got a collection of parts. And then if you say, is that the car? Yes, that is the car. There is a car there on the collection of parts. So the car cannot be found within it, because it is only a number of individual parts. But we put them all together, and then there's a collection of parts, and there's a car. However, it's not that now on the collection of parts a truly existing car is found. Rather, on this collection of parts, one can impute the name car. So that then would be the second step. On this collection of parts, one imputes the name car. So what we've seen now from all of this is that no truly existent car, or a car that exists from its own side, not dependent on anything else, can be found. Rather, we have a collection of parts which come together in dependence on various causes and conditions. So therefore, a car is dependent on parts, is dependent on causes and conditions. So therefore, a car is not independent, existent from its own side. And then furthermore, on this collection of parts and causes and conditions, one imputes the name car.
Gangla tuba mo nga rang gi dube na 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 shin ji zimba na ji nga di
So that's, we've used now the illustration of an external phenomenon such as a car, because it's very easy to understand. But the important one that we need to look at is for the eye. So the eye is something we're all overly familiar with. I am happy, I want this, I don't want that, etc. So this, the eye appears to us, and like all phenomena that appears to our mind, it appears to be truly existent. So, and then we have a mind that grasps at this appearance of true existence. So this is the mind of true grasping, and as it's grasping at the truly existent, at the appearance of true existence of the eye, it's called the mind of self-grasping. Now we have this appearance of a truly existent eye. So just like with a car, let's investigate this appearance to see if we can find this truly existent eye. Now, so we look, we start off by looking at the aggregates, and to see, so if the eye exists truly, then where we should find it within the aggregates, in the physical or mental aggregates. So we start with the physical, because it's easy to understand, and we mentally separate our body into parts, and we have arms and legs and the like, and it's clear that none of those can be called the eye, because that's a leg, it's not the eye. So we can then quickly go through the various components of the physical aggregates and see that nowhere within that is something that we can say is the eye. So then let's look at the mind. So we may think, so the eye is the mind. So let's look at what mind is, because mind isn't one thing, as there are many minds. So we have the minds of the past. So is that the eye? Well, it can't be, because that's past. So are we the I, are we the minds of the future? Is the I the minds of the future? Well, no, because they haven't come yet. So then we need to look at the I of the present. So we then need to look at the minds of the present to see if they are truly the truly existent I. So the minds of the present, it's not one thing. We know we have many minds present at all times. We are sitting here, we are aware of ourselves, we have various feelings and thoughts, etc. So we have all these minds going on. So which one of these is the I then? So if we have, say, a mind of jealousy right now, is that mind of jealousy the I? Or if we are a bit annoyed right now, is that annoyance, that's the mind in the presence, is that the I? Or if we have a happy feeling, is that happy feeling the truly existent I? So, in this way, we come to see that the I is not to be found amongst the aggregates, can't be found amongst the physical aggregates, and we look amongst the mental aggregates, and we also cannot find the I. So in this way, investigating like this, we can't find this truly existent I, and we rather come to an understanding of mere emptiness, or we come to a realization of mere emptiness. Investigating like this, going through the various parts, trying to find this object that appears to us as truly existent, we come to see that we can't find it. So if we're looking for the person, we come to see that the person that cannot be found in the way that it appears. And this then leads us to an understanding of mere emptiness, or that the person is merely empty. And this is an understanding of emptiness. And then the mind that is understanding emptiness is the wisdom understanding emptiness. And this wisdom understanding emptiness is the direct antidote to the mind of true grasping, the root of all the afflictions. Going through our analysis like this, looking for, first of all, seeing how an object appears to us, and then investigating to see whether we can find that appearance, whether we can find the object to exist in the way that it appears. So that's what we've looked at now, first about the car and then the eye. So then, here, we're in danger of falling into a common mistake. So, one may, looking for the eye and examining the eye and coming to see that it doesn't exist in the way it appears, and coming to this understanding of mere emptiness, one comes to the conclusion that the eye doesn't exist. And this is a particularly dangerous conclusion if it is misunderstood. Because if the eye doesn't exist, there's no eye that's going to progress to Buddhahood. There's no eye that may fall to the lower realms. And this, of course, is a wrong view. This is a potentially dangerous view. So rather, the understanding is that the I that appears as truly existent, that I does not exist. It doesn't mean the I doesn't exist. No, let me rephrase that. So the I that appears as truly existent, that doesn't exist, because true existence doesn't exist. But we know that there is an I. We experience an I, we experience ourselves, we experience the car. So how does this exist? Well, the I ends up existing in the way, just like the car. There is the I exists in dependence on aggregates. It exists in dependence on parts, such as the aggregates. It exists in dependence on causes and conditions. And on top of that, then the name I is merely imputed. So that conclusion then would be the same conclusion for any object, such as the car. It doesn't exist truly, which is the way that it appears, but rather it's rather dependent on parts and causes and conditions and the aggregates, and on top of that basis, it is then this collection, then the name is imputed. So we've heard here then that the eye is actually dependent, is imputed upon a collection of causes and conditions and parts, etc. So this is an understanding that we come through hearing and then through meditation. But this is an understanding that we innately have. Rather, the eye, like all phenomena, appears to us as being truly existent. So this appearance of true existence, this just naturally arises to us. And then as we heard, we have this appearance of true existence, say the truly existent eye, then we grasp at it as existing in that way, and that's the mind of true grasping, or in the case of the self, then it's the mind of self-grasping. And then from this basis come all the other afflictions, such as attachments. I want, this truly existent I wants, this truly existence of I doesn't want, and then anger comes. So from this mind of true grasping, which is the root cause, and why? Because from the root cause, all the other afflictions spring up. So seeing in meditation, when we come to see that the I doesn't exist in this way, then we come to understand that the mere emptiness, and that the I is rather dependent on causes and conditions, then the root cause is eliminated, and all the resulting afflictive minds cease. To try and then take this explanation of the usefulness of emptiness into the more practical realms. then let's start out by repeating a well-known story. So, or well-known analogy. So if when we come to leave here and we go outside and we walk into to the place of eating or to our car or our room, and maybe in the shadow under a tree, we see a shape and we immediately think that's a snake because we've heard there are snakes around here and now we think we've seen one. So immediately we see the snake and what happens? Fear arises within us. Anger then arises and we think, I need to kill this snake because this is really dangerous. Then we back away and from this dangerous situation. Maybe our heart is beating quite quickly. And then we go and call a brave friend and say, I've seen a snake, come and help me deal with the situation. And we approach the snake now with our friend. And our friend looks at the snake and says, that's not a snake, that's just some rope. And immediately now, in the light of his wisdom, we see that what we feared was not a snake. It is just some rope. There's nothing that can bite us and kill us. So in that moment, then all our fear's gone, all our anger's gone. Now we're laughing at our mistake and we're feeling appreciation for our friend who has helped us out in this situation. So this analogy then we can relate to all our experiences in that here the appearance of snake, of the appearance of a snake that doesn't exist is likened to the appearance of true existence that doesn't exist. So this appearance of snake is on the basis of an object, rope, and this appearance of snake doesn't exist because it's a rope. So likewise, each and every object that we perceive it as being truly existence. So whether it's an eye, whether it's a car, whether it is a mind or someone's personality, whatever that object is, it appears to us as being truly existent. So it appears to us as being a snake when it's really a rope. And then when we investigate, or we call our wise friend, and our wise friend says, that's not a snake, that's a rope. This is the process of investigation. And here we investigate, we look for this appearance of true existence, we look to see, does the object exist in the way that it appears? And we come to realize that it doesn't. And that realization is the wisdom understanding emptiness. So just like our friend points out to us the fault of what we've seen, and then we realize there's no snake, then what happens? Our fear is gone. Our anger is gone. All these afflictions disappear. So similarly, when we realize that the object doesn't exist in the way that it appears, all the afflictive minds that resulted from the mind of true grasping, these disappear. Because we no longer will be, for example, attached or angry towards an object that doesn't exist in that way. Because it's just getting attached or angry to something that is actually that a non-existent appearance.
Chisamdana
Now let's work through a meditation. Let's work through how to meditate on emptiness. So we can, of course, take any object, but because all objects appear to us as truly existent. But let's take the eye which is so important. So how does the eye appear to us? This is the first step. We need to come to understand how the eye appears to us, and we need to understand it, and we need to come to experience how the eye appears to us, or how any object appears to us. And so here we're hearing the theory. So the theory is the eye appears to us as being truly existent, and that the meaning of that is it appears to be independent. It doesn't, in other words, not dependent on anything else, independent. And it appears therefore to be existent from its own side, to be existent by way of its own defining characteristics. So that's how the eye and every object that appears to our mind appears. So that, we now hear the theory, but we need to investigate and slowly come to see that for ourselves. Then the second step. So now we've come to an understanding, and later maybe an experience of how something appears to us. So now we investigate, does it exist in the way that it appears? So is its appearance in accordance with reality? So here comes to now the second step, this investigation. Does it exist in the way that it appears? Does it exist truly? And then we investigate the objects, and we heard a couple of illustrations, a physical object such as a car, or an object such as the eye. So if we take in the eye, we investigate first through the physical aggregates, and we'll see that the eye cannot be found in any of the body parts because, for example, this finger is a finger, it's not the eye. And likewise, then we move to the mind. And so we think, so is this truly existent eye to be found anywhere within the minds? So we investigate like we heard before, minds of the past and the future and the present, and within the present there are many, and we look for the eye there. And we'll come to see that the eye cannot be found anywhere at all. And this is then an understanding of mere emptiness. So this is the understanding of mere emptiness, and the mind that that has this understanding is the mind understanding emptiness. So this is something that we can come to, this understanding we can come to quite easily. I'm sure many of you now sitting here, you have an understanding of this. However, that doesn't mean we have a realization of emptiness. So now just to say from my side, this word realization in English tends to have a very big meaning. But here, let's say we're talking realization with a lowercase r. So not a big realization, small realization. So just having an understanding of emptiness is not having a realization of emptiness. A realization of emptiness will come about when there is a strong reaction or a strong feeling that arises within one when one has come to understand mere emptiness or come to realize mere emptiness. So this would be experiencing that there's been a change in our mind, a change in our mind due to our understanding of emptiness. So this would be experienced through a strong reaction and a change in our way of thinking. So that then would be a realization of emptiness, a small r realization of emptiness, as opposed to an understanding of emptiness. And then this will come about due to repeated reflection, of course. So that's the meditation on emptiness, with the first step, coming to understand how objects appear as truly. The second step, doing the investigation, the analysis, does it exist in the way that it appears? Then we come to the third step, which is then to understand how some things, that while something that no phenomenon exists truly, rather phenomenon exists as a, just let me say this conventionally, as a mere imputation onto a collection of parts and causes and conditions. So this mere imputation of name. So that understanding, this third point, is to counter the nihilistic view of things do not exist. So rather to understand that things exist as mere imputations on a basis of a collection of parts and causes and conditions. So that's the three steps in the meditation of emptiness. Then from this, a strong mind of compassion will arise. So this deepening, maybe a strong deepening of one's understanding of compassion arises from having meditated on emptiness. So how does this come about? So when one comes to understand emptiness in the way that it's been described, so in this powerful way where there's a change in one's mind, where there's a strong emotional response to one's understanding of emptiness, then at that point one has a very clear understanding of dependent arising. Because if one understands one understands the other. So one will then have a very clear, so powerful understanding of dependent arising. So with this understanding of dependent arising, then one will understand that all one's problems and sufferings, and all the problems and sufferings experienced by all beings, arise independent on causes and conditions. All happiness, both temporary and lasting, arise independent on causes and conditions. And so thinking like that, one comes to a very powerful understanding of or a powerful appreciation of others. Because it's only through being able to meditate on the object of others that we can recognize, that we can give rise to these realizations within us. So we can, through meditating on the kindness of others, can we come to the realization of the kindness of others. It's only through meditating on the suffering of others that we can come to the realization of compassion. So this then shows us the great kindness of others, because our realizations arose independent on our meditation, but on the objects of others. And in this way then we come to a great appreciation of others, and compassion arises very strongly within us, because we see how the attainment of all paths, paths such as love and compassion, are dependent on the kindness of others.
Kissing Nimakashi and Lojo singing machine, that don't dining bomb at some dangle at the Carolina, that's young Kissing Shevana, Yeah, getting Jogo and Shenya and Pembe Jugin, that's also that's it, Delia, and Chigay, Kohapiova, Luda, and Samatayata, Jay, Kohop Chazan, Yudikable, Shen Pembe Jugin, Samba Samata. There is Yenna Pembe to do Pembe the Carella, Shen Simjan and Jelly Diogo Bada, Duma Mibode, Chesa, Simjan, Digi Jugi, Simjan, Duma the Java thing, Jigin, Ding Hijin, some. And that Nichin, Dendang Arangi, Jevala, and the Nuba Chimbu Jola, Sanji Goma Matuna. Din Tan的三月国王推下来的那了，俺两个开始结果是呢，俺就，金巴当，出什么算呀？出什么算？现在你要把资金面，身边三毛地当，你金巴什么当的现在呀？偏不弱，资金身边三毛地了哇！我不是现在三毛地当，但你当才当才接了，俺就，你地接了东尼过，但点点是让啊，这的，你弱不起是俺些的可能多，俺那现，你这是。 先生们他们就来第一组的先生他们介绍的看得出来现在呢当你三九国王头发去三九国王是看得有的的确我说那晚哪心就要买的可刚才的鱼蛋见切些忙不起来对的错的可是对的准则嘛都让我们呢鱼蛋见切些刚来嘛让我们这个早给的免啊是被三楼大的第一的我说过来就是杨来杨都是现在你个杨都都三大
a lot more to be said, of course, on the subject of emptiness, but our time is very much up, so I'm afraid we need to end the retreat here. But before we completely finish, let's just summarize what we've looked at and summarize it in terms of how to meditate on all that we've covered. So if we look at the essence, this is how you can meditate. So here, you've had a lot of a detailed description on a number of meditations and yesterday afternoon. These were brought together. So now let's look at those briefly and how one can engage in those meditations, adding in one's understanding of emptiness. So one starts out, as we've heard, about thinking about how we won't harm others, how we will only benefit others, and we've spoken at some length about how to do that meditation. But if we're going to add the understanding of emptiness to this, we remind ourselves of some of the points we've already heard. So all our for example, the body that we have, this body that we take such good care of, this is dependent on the kindness of others. So there's a reminder of emptiness. What we have here, our body, is dependent on the kindness of others. It's not independent. It's not truly existent. All the resources that we have, the wide array of resources that we have, these too are dependent on the kindness of others. So that's we've heard about before. But now we add in our understanding of emptiness. So all these things that we have are not truly existent. They don't exist from their own side. They exist in dependence on causes and conditions and on parts, and included in those causes and conditions, others. So in this way, we come to appreciate the kindness of others. And furthermore, another point we heard in the context of patience, the development of our inner qualities, these too are dependent on the kindness of others. So whether it's teachers, whether it's objects of patience, or whether objects of our, say, practice of generosity, all the good qualities that we have are dependent on others. And therefore, all these minds, these good mental qualities that we have, they too are not truly existent. They too do not exist independently, but in dependence. And in dependence on a variety of things, including the kindness of others. So with this understanding, the kindness of others becomes much more powerful in our mind. And therefore, the resulting mind, such as love and compassion, will be that much more powerful. Then we can move our meditation on with the understanding that if I engage in this practice so that I can be happier, so that I can progress on the spiritual path, well, that will come about, but that is a small result. That's just about me. I need to be much more concerned with others. Others are many more than just me, and most others have no idea how to engage in the causes of happiness, how to abandon the causes of suffering. So therefore, I need to work primarily for the welfare of others. So this then gives rise to the other cherishing mind. And then we can, and as we heard in one of the previous meditations, that we come to a point where we've generated the minds of love and compassion and bodhicitta, and we've given rise to bodhicitta, and now we're thinking about the various activities that bodhisattvas engage in. So these are the six perfections: generosity, ethical conduct, patience, and the like. So here we now combine our understanding of emptiness with these practices too. Let's take, so for example, the practice of generosity. So here, there is first of all a sentient being who is in need. So that sentient being is not truly existent, appears as such, but is not. The object that we are engaging in practice of generosity, whether it's giving our time, giving advice, giving material goods, that too appears as truly existent, but is not. Then the mind of generosity that we have generated, or the altruistic mind that we have generated, if we see how this appears, and it, like every phenomenon that appears to our mind, appears as truly existent, and we investigate and we see that it's merely empty, it's not truly existent. And likewise, the virtue that comes from this practice of this act of generosity, that too is not truly existent. And likewise, the result of Buddhahood, that too is not truly existent. So in this way, we can combine our understanding of emptiness with the practice of generosity and with all the other perfections. So this meditation now is something that can be mixed into the meditations that we've heard to up to this point. Because in this way, we're combining the method part, the practices relating to compassion and the like, with the wisdom part, the part of emptiness. And in this way, we can do these two together. And then, if you are able to do this repeatedly over a sustained period, then change will come. Many of you have traveled here from quite some distance, and you've stayed here now for 5 days, and you've all come due to a strong aspiration to hear the teachings of the Buddha and to meditate on these, to give rise to them within yourself and become kinder people, gentler people. So this really brings great joy to my mind, knowing that you want to progress on the spiritual path and thereby be of greater benefit to beings in the world. So I want to say thank you. I really appreciate that you have this aspiration. And then furthermore, due to you coming here and engaging wholeheartedly, I've had the opportunity to read this text again and to meditate on it a lot, as well as then to share my understanding with you. So I personally have also attained great benefit from this. So I want to say thank you for enabling me to also progress spiritually. And then thirdly, I want to say a heartfelt thank you to Lundrup, because he has put a lot of time and energy over quite a period preparing for this retreat, and then ensuring that he came to every session, of course, and did them as well as he could. So I want to say thank you to him as well.
And then I
also want to say a heartfelt thank you to Andy, who has done so much to make this course possible. So you would have seen some of his direct involvement, but indirectly, if it wasn't for him and his efforts, nothing would have happened here. So I wouldn't have been requested to teach, you wouldn't have seen any of the advertisements or come to hear about the course. So Andy did not only help directly, but he did so much in the background to bring everything together. So I want to say thank you to you as well for making everything possible. And so here, it's important that we reflect on the kindness of others and see how everything that we have experienced here is due to the kindness of others, and that all the future benefit that will come is therefore due to the kindness of others. And how this is like is the experience is we as a group have accumulated this virtuous karma together. We've heard teachings, we've meditated on teachings, we've engaged in karma yoga and the like to help sustain the group. So we've all created very powerful virtuous karma together. And this will ripen in the future. And it's likely to ripen in us coming together again in the future and continuing with our spiritual progression, continuing with the development of the good heart. So therefore, we should really generate great joy in our minds at the endeavors of others, the kindness of others, and also great joy in what we ourselves have achieved.
dinigi nyamlin jeba inza ta sangye da janju semba cha sangye kingyo re ani cha sangye yongdo ya ani pe ma se yahu junso sembe ge tu nye bu cha go re jina dinne ani jin la jawrum che da la so ba da ngan zeberum che sembe na ta dinigi mini che so na pa tu chin be ya ju sha sembe tu nye yo re tu nye ban za ma ju gi tu chin ne me chi ge nyamlin che di ta che ba ye zhebe che ba che go re zhebe che ba
然后, moreover, there will be many unseen beings who right now and throughout these 5 days have generated great joy in their exalted minds at what we are doing here. So I'm talking specifically about all the Buddhas and all the Bodhisattvas who will be aware that we are now engaging in the development of virtuous minds. We are progressing towards achieving a state just like them. We are progressing towards being able to be skilled assistants in fulfilling their goal of leading all beings to full and complete enlightenment. And none more so now will be rejoicing than His Holiness and Lama Zopa. And it's through their kindness that we have been able to accumulate this huge amount of virtue. So when we come to dedicate this virtue, we should specifically also dedicate to them remaining amongst us and then the successful accomplishment of all their goals. And this here would be the practice of generosity of offering of Dharma. Sorry, the practice of offering of practice. Yeah, it's be the offering of practice, not offering of Dharma.
那电力机呢就算那么几个图了电力机电力机呢三级电吧那运力的那把当那这个水果里面其他叫我们去了说吧那电力机它最难背给你这个去三把上部去先也判断也先不如推荐的这个忙不久了的的车上我那的那车上不用啊当那三级要不用啊这电力机嘛这当然是怎么样 这年拿着当，这年给冒出了，是吧？车上新的，证明确实稀的用啊当。那当然，你主要是讲他们这绿金拿着的，甚至同啊，车上细节绿的吧，甚至几吧，那三节各方有的特别的，有些什么讲车上的给我的，那里上当的，我讲的。
We come to dedicate or recite the dedication prayers in a few minutes, then. And generate a concentrated mind and dedicate specifically thinking that may all the holy beings in the world, may they continue to abide amongst us, and may all their aspirations for the sake of others be fulfilled as quickly as possible. In particular, those that we have good connect or strong connection with, such as His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Lama Zopa Rinpoche. May all their holy aspirations be fulfilled as quickly as possible. And furthermore, when we dedicate, we dedicate so that for the attainment of world peace, both inner as well as outer peace, that people can live in harmony together and be gentle and kind towards each other. And that all beings only experience physical happiness with all illness being alleviated of all illness and experience only happiness mentally. And thereby all beings, through this dedication of merit, may they come to attain parts of the Mahayana Dharma in their continuum and progress and attain the final state of exalted Buddhahood. Then, thank you very much. Of course, there's no time for questions, so if we can finish here then.
Yeah, Jambo, Yeah.